From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters.
Diagnosis, diabetes, how childhood type 2 diabetes is on the rise. What are the health consequences and barriers to treatment?
I actually was just telling a friend, I said, man, it would be awful if I became diabetic because I don't know anything about it.
I'm having to take dialysis. You don't want to get on that chair. You do not want to get on that chair.
There's a lot of blame and there's a lot of shame in type 2.
Kids are being pumped with advertising for really terrible foods.
And there's not a child in my practice that can eat the American diet. There is not one. They cannot eat this food. It is not made for human consumption.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies.
And I'm Yvette Benavides. This special project was funded with a grant from the 2022 Impact Fund for Reporting on Health Equity and Health Systems offered by the USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism.
Diabetes is widespread. The CDC estimates almost 40 million Americans have it. That's about 1 in 10 people. Diabetes and its complications are more common and more severe in low-income Americans and people of color.
Another problem is this trend. Younger and younger people are being diagnosed with diabetes, even children as young as 5. That was unheard of 20 years ago. And by 2060, diagnosed diabetes in the U.S. is projected to nearly triple, and the prevalence will double to 1 in 5.
According to the National Diabetes Statistics Report, last year in the U.S., diabetes cost an estimated $400 billion in medical cost and lost work and wages.
But let me highlight the human cost. In the U.S., diabetes is a leading cause of kidney failure, lower limb amputations, and blindness in adults, and is a major contributor to death, including death from COVID-19.
There is no cure for diabetes, but it can be managed. And for those who have pre-diabetes, preventing a type 2 diabetes diagnosis is doable and should be a priority. So Yvette, what are you looking to accomplish with this reporting?
Well, I hope that this work can raise awareness and diminish some of the stigma and some of the misunderstanding about type 2 diabetes. Over these many months of our research, I've perceived a kind of diabetes denial, the sense that people think they know what diabetes is and believe it won't touch their lives. But it is a disease that just catches up with people. So I hope that reporting like this can open up some frank conversations about all of this. How about you?
I want to ask this question. Why aren't we doing more to prevent type 2 diabetes? It is preventable, but frankly, I'm seeing an overall muted societal response to this exploding health crisis. Sure, there are some efforts to educate the public about eating healthy and exercise, but I don't see proportional messaging in balance to the magnitude of this problem. Meanwhile, there are so many factors making childhood type 2 diabetes worse, like the lack of availability of affordable, healthy food in low-income neighborhoods, the marketing of junk food to kids, and misleading food labels.
Candies that are 100% sugar are advertised as a fat-free food, and sugar drinks are advertised as a good source of vitamin C because they toss a little vitamin C into it. So you're getting a message that this is a healthy drink, but it's basically sugar water.
I spoke to Dr. William Herman about this. He's a professor at the University of Michigan in the medical school, and he served as the chair of the National Clinical Care Commission.
Your risk of diabetes is greater if you live in a community with fast food restaurants and convenience stores, and it's your risk of type 2 diabetes is lower if there are full service grocery stores in the community or the neighborhood where you live. People who live in substandard housing have more diabetes. People who live in neighborhoods without parks or recreation facilities have more diabetes.
The National Clinical Care Commission released a report to Congress in 2021 that called for an all-in governmental approach to preventing diabetes that recognizes that this is a societal problem. The report recommends the creation of a federal office of diabetes policy that would create a national strategy to combat diabetes that would tap into parts of the government not normally associated with disease fighting.
Through the Department of Agriculture, Transportation, Housing and Urban Development, FDA, EPA for clean water. So tackling diabetes as a societal problem.
That sounds really ambitious. So what happened?
This plan isn't gaining traction in D.C. With the nation divided and so much pushback on dealing with COVID, there wasn't much of an appetite for expanding the role of government to contain another deadly disease.
So that means without a national strategy that would help people eat healthier, be more active, and manage their diabetes, the work is going to have to be done piecemeal. It's going to take local communities coming together, recognizing the diabetes problems, and demanding action.
And that takes us back to your focus, raising awareness. To find out more about what people think about diabetes, what are the risks, and how it affects them, we did some community outreach.
To meet people where they are, we went to San Antonio's Woodlawn Lake Park on a spring Saturday morning. We set up a table next to the walking path. It was festooned with bottles of water, Texas Public Radio swag, and some vegetable plants potted up to give away.
The plants were a hit. Folks came to the table, and we were able to ask them about type 2 diabetes. Is it something that affects their family?
I was amazed that nearly every person we spoke to was directly impacted in some way by the disease and its complications. Here's what Sandra Smith told us.
I just see my family struggle. My father had it, my grandmother. I have two brothers that have diabetes.
So because diabetes is so present in her immediate family, Sandra is certainly at risk for it. But she told us she wasn't really aware of that.
Even though I know it's in my family, I wasn't paying attention because I didn't have it. But now that I'm like pre-diabetic, now I'm trying to, I've been to a nutritionist and we've been talking about things to eat. So that's my struggle, potatoes and no refined, no chips, no cookies, no, you know, have a cookie, but not the whole pack of cookies, stuff like that.
And she's walking. That physical activity is important to help increase a person's tolerance to sugar in the bloodstream. Another diabetes risk factor is a sedentary lifestyle.
What struck me was that many people we met told us they were aware of diabetes and its terrible health complications, but they didn't know much more than that. Like Laura Virial said, her father is diabetic and she has high blood pressure, but she didn't realize that she is at risk.
What I actually was just telling a friend, I said, man, it would be awful if I became diabetic because I don't know anything about it.
According to the CDC, 1 in 3 people in the U.S. is pre-diabetic. That means they need to know their risk for full-blown type 2 diabetes so they can avoid that. But most people don't know that they are pre-diabetic. A simple blood test should detect pre-diabetes. But if you don't have health insurance or a primary care doctor, then how are you going to know?
The idea that diabetes is an intergenerational problem is one we heard quite a lot that day.
My mother had type 2 diabetes and also my dad. My dad lost his leg because of diabetes. And they're both deceased, but you could say more or less diabetes took them.
That's Mary Estrada. She's a nurse we met on the walking trail, and she's seen the increase in type 2 diabetes, particularly in children.
Really, I think education should start at home, and I think they could use a little education, even in elementary school, because a lot of kids are obese.
In Texas, 20% of youth ages 10 to 17 have obesity, according to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's State of Obesity Report. There is a close association between obesity and type 2 diabetes. However, this relationship is complex and still requires further research. But we do know that being obese is a diabetes risk factor.
A preschool teacher we talked to at the park raised these same concerns. She didn't want us to use her real name and asked us to call her Karen. She said that over the years, she's observed that more and more children are obese.
You know, over the past 10 years, it's just gotten worse. Like, we see kindergartners come in, you know, like obese, they're pretty heavy.
She said it's difficult for families to eat healthy because of food cost and convenience.
This is destroying our children. It is destroying their lives.
Dr. Lindsay Irvin is a San Antonio pediatrician.
It is taking decades off their lives. And there's not a child in my practice that can eat the American diet. There is not one. They will hit a wall at some point. And for some of them, it's 6, and for some of it's 25. They will hit a wall. They cannot eat this food. It is not made for human consumption.
Dr. Irvin is witnessing the rapid growth of childhood type 2 diabetes and partly blames it on the food that makes up what is known as the standard American diet.
To help the kids understand that all of this plentiful, delicious food is a threat, Dr. Irvin taps into an old fairy tale, Hansel and Gretel.
And then I ask the kids, well, what did the witch want to do with the kids? And they go, she wanted to eat them. They love that idea. And I was like, exactly. This is exactly, you know, the sugar company doesn't want you healthy. Your mom wants you healthy. I want you healthy. You know, the video game industry doesn't care what happens to you when you're 80. They just want you playing the games. They just want money. And they get it. They totally get it.
Research done in San Antonio shows that childhood type 2 diabetes is rising at an alarming rate, and it's extremely aggressive. Even with treatment before these kids reach middle age, they could have complications like blindness, amputations, or be on dialysis.
The younger ages probably reflect a higher risk for comorbidities and complications.
That's Dr. Jane Lynch, a pediatric endocrinologist for UT Health San Antonio. She was the principal investigator for a groundbreaking study called Treatment Options for Type 2 Diabetes in Adolescents and Youth, also known as the TODAY study.
Based on our data from the TODAY study, these kids that were 10 to 17 at the age of onset progressed on to risks for complications and not being able to be managed with oral medication alone, or having what we call beta cell failure at a mean of 12 months in that first phase of our TODAY study, whereas that would usually take 18 to 20 years in an adult.
This means the diabetes complications that would usually take 18 to 20 years in an adult, like loss of eyesight, kidney disease, or vascular problems, developed much more rapidly and aggressively in children with type 2 diabetes. And there's this family connection to type 2 diabetes. If your parents have it, then you are at risk. Studies have shown that children of mothers who had gestational diabetes during pregnancy are at increased risk of diabetes themselves.
There are mothers who are trying to break this chain of diabetes risk. We met Amelia Quiroga, who was part of the TODAY study when she was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes when she was a teenager.
I was 15 when it started. My whole right side went numb. So I was rushed to the hospital, and that's when they told us that my sugar was really high.
That was 18 years ago, and now Amelia has her own daughter, Juliana, and she was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes at 10 years old.
From when she was a baby, I've always tried to keep sugars away from her, and like a lot of carbs away from her, and I was just kind of like perplexed, like, how could this have happened? We ate healthy, you know, we were not the best, but not the worst.
Amelia will not allow her children to eat fast food, but that doesn't leave a lot of options available.
I believe we should have access to healthier foods, easier access, you know, especially places with poverty. There's not access. There's McDonald's on every corner. I think that's the main thing.
But it's difficult for many families to completely forego fast food. It's cheap, convenient, heavily marketed, and the products are designed to be tasty.
There have been studies that found a rise in type 2 diabetes in neighborhoods with fast food eateries. Fast foods, processed foods, and pre-made snack foods have high sugar levels and tend to be high in trans and saturated fats, which can raise levels of triglycerides. High levels of triglycerides increase the risk of developing type 2 diabetes.
So, if someone has type 2 diabetes, they should avoid unhealthy fast foods. But if they don't know they're diabetic or pre-diabetic, then what?
Getting screened for diabetes is critical. A blood sugar test could alert you to diabetes before serious symptoms and complications present themselves.
These tests are, on occasion, available free at pharmacies or at health fairs, but they're not a substitute for a test from a primary care doctor. Unfortunately, for many, a foot injury that won't heal is the first sign that they are diabetic. That's what happened to Felipe Quiroz, who at 40 years old received the diagnosis.
I noticed that my foot was hurting, and when I went to go see a podiatrist, the podiatrist noticed it, and he said, "How long have you had that wound?" And I said, "Oh, probably about a month." And he says, "You know what? I'm going to have you take a urinary test." So they had me take a urinary test, and it came back that I was diabetic.
The doctor tried to treat the injury, but things didn't go well.
When they told me, "Hey, Mr. Quiroz, I'm so sorry, but, you know, we're going to have to amputate your toe." That hit me like, I don't know, my gut sank, you know. Like, oh, no, I didn't expect that. I did not expect that. And then once I lost the foot, I couldn't walk very well.
And the diabetes complications didn't end there.
I'm now a renal patient. I'm having to take dialysis. You don't want to get on that chair. You do not want to get on that chair.
Felipe Quiroz said he first learned about dialysis from witnessing his mother go through the process.
I'm going to the same facility and being treated by the same doctors that treated her. And when I would go visit my mom and bring her something for lunch, I would see all these people in the chairs, and I would bring my mom lunch. They would tell me, "Oh, you shouldn't bring your mom, you know, Whataburger. You shouldn't bring your mom a Big Red." Yeah, well, why not? I told you, don't. And now it's happening to me.
Well, I became a diabetic when I turned 42. All of a sudden, I woke up one day and my feet were numb and my legs were numb. I had no idea there was neuropathy.
This is Angelo Bedoya. He says he thought he was having a heart attack, so he went to the hospital.
So they drew some blood. About 2 hours later, they came back and said, "Well, how long have you been a diabetic?" I'm like, "Never been a diabetic." Well, I guess you are now. Your A1C is off the wall.
That was 8 years ago. Now Angelo is living with the complications of diabetes. He is blind. We met Angelo after we aired messages on Texas Public Radio asking for people's stories about living with diabetes. We were so moved by what he shared that we knew we had to meet him.
We picked him up. He's living with his ex-in-laws because right now Angelo doesn't have any income, and so they have taken him in.
We went to a coffee shop to talk. Angelo told us about how before he was diagnosed, he didn't think he was at risk for diabetes. He was never told about pre-diabetes. He didn't think he had an unhealthy lifestyle.
When I became a diabetic, the doctor told me, "Well, if you would have exercised a little more, if you would have dropped 10, 15 pounds more, you probably could have avoided this. I mean, it's manageable, but you could have avoided this."
But that's the thing with type 2 diabetes. It's an insidious and unforgiving disease. As it is undetected, the chronic high levels of sugar in the bloodstream are damaging blood vessels and the body's organs, weakening the heart, causing problems with the kidneys, damaging feet, nerves, gums, and, like with Angelo, the eyes.
Angelo said he wanted to talk to us because he wants others to learn from his mistakes.
End-of-life renal disease is terrible, seeing somebody amputated. Honestly, if I would have seen this 5 years before I became a diabetic and told me this is going to be you, and you won't even make it to 70, you probably not even make it to 60, yeah, I would have done something else to avoid it or live better with the disease.
But Angelo didn't adjust his lifestyle when he had the chance because he didn't know that he had diabetes. I would argue that if there's any one thing that we can do about diabetes is to make testing and screening more available.
Now, there is one quick screening hack for diabetes that we learned about. It's a telltale marker.
Yes, the line on the back of their neck, this right here.
Andrea is a nurse at a San Antonio school district and asked us not to use her last name. She's demonstrating how she screens students for potential childhood type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, that's what we look for, that dark line on there.
She's checking for a patch of skin that is thick and dark. It frequently indicates that there's too much insulin in the blood and can be a sign of diabetes risk.
It looks kind of dirty, but that's kind of what it looks like.
It's not a dirty neck. It's a medical condition known as acanthosis nigricans.
The word acanthosis nigricans. And I had a problem in finally learning how to pronounce the acanthosis nigricans.
That's State Representative Roberto Gutierrez, a Democrat from McAllen. In 2001, he was in a Texas House hearing explaining his bill to help children beat diabetes by requiring school screenings for acanthosis nigricans, also known as AN.
For $5, we can do so much. We can prevent millions of expenditures in the future.
According to the American Diabetes Association, the annual financial burden on Texas due to diabetes is $26 billion.
Gutierrez's bill passed, and the Texas Risk Assessment for Type 2 Diabetes and Children Screening Program was created.
The program is the only active real-world intervention and prevention effort in the state, probably even in the country.
Doreen Garza is the director of the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley Border Health Office that administers the program.
The program has assessed over 15 million children and has identified almost a million children with risk factors associated with type 2 diabetes across the state.
Garza says what they see is a worsening crisis.
The data is there. These kids are increasingly becoming overweight, which is a serious risk factor. They are, you know, presenting with AN. They have high blood pressures. The scary part is the complications are going to be that much worse.
But here's the setback. This diabetes screening is happening in schools. When COVID-19 blew up, campuses closed and the program hit a wall.
So there were a lot of children that weren't attending school. So obviously they weren't able to be assessed.
David Salazar is the associate director for the UT-RGV Porter Health Office. He said in a typical school year, over 1 million students were screened for AN. But with the outbreak of COVID, the number of screenings were cut in half. So even though kids are now back in the classroom, these screenings aren't happening with the regularity of pre-COVID. And to make matters worse, according to a study by the CDC, type 2 diabetes in children intensified due to COVID because they were less active and had greater access to snacks, and they were stressed from the isolation and uncertainty of the times.
The question now is, if the kids are back on campus, then why aren't they being screened? Garza and Salazar say they're going to find that out.
That's one of the things that we're trying to figure out right now. As a matter of fact, Doreen and I are going to be doing a circuit, going out there and conducting focus groups with school nurses.
What they're likely to find is that our healthcare system, including school nurses, was overburdened and undersupported during the pandemic, and it's going to take additional resources and time to get back to the new normal.
But for the children who have AN and missed being assessed, there's little time to waste.
3, 2, 1.
At a recent 5K, the Cupcake Run, runners and walkers took to the streets to raise money to battle childhood brain cancer.
On the stage and hyping up the crowd is DJ Axe 6, 14-year-old Abram Estrada.
Because I am into it, man.
He's mixing the music and putting on a show, jumping up and down and waving his arms. Because of his energetic performance, you might not guess that he lives with a chronic illness, type 2 diabetes.
They're just like, yeah, you have it. It's type 2.
The diagnosis came in January of 2021. Like most kids at the time, Abram was dealing with the COVID shutdown and online schooling, but also a disruption to his music career.
I would do like shows like every weekend, like all day long type stuff. And like ever since, like obviously I couldn't go anywhere because of COVID, I did like nothing 24/7. I would sleep every day, like a whole time.
He was also continuously thirsty and drank liters of sugary soda. He began having chest pains and low energy. Abram's parents both have diabetes and recognized the symptoms. They checked his blood sugar, his A1C.
Then one morning they woke me up and they're like, let's check your sugar and all that. So they pricked me and all that. I was like 300 plus. They're like, we got to take you to the doctor.
Abram's mom, Cynthia De La Pena, took it hard.
So I didn't think that Abram would have, you know, this happen at 13. And then have your whole world kind of turned upside down.
40 years ago, type 2 diabetes in children was rare, but not anymore.
Type 1 diabetes was always called juvenile onset diabetes in the past, and type 2 diabetes was known as adult onset diabetes. This is really out the window now.
Dr. Jane Lynch is a professor of pediatric endocrinology at UT Health San Antonio. She says more and more children are being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and they are younger and younger.
We've seen down to age 5 years of age for type 2, which is rare, but many of our kids are in the 8 to 9 year range. 50% are presenting with the workup that shows they're type 2, usually in families with high rates of type 2 among parents and grandparents.
That's the case for Abram's family. His parents are diabetic and his mother's father died from the condition's complications.
I lost my dad in 2006. He was in his late 40s, early 50s.
Lynch says this multi-generational aspect of type 2 diabetes in children is critical.
Being in the womb of a mother who has type 2 diabetes with some high blood sugars actually alters your genes to be at higher risk for earlier onset type 2 and early onset obesity. And I think it explains this pretty rapid escalation of rates of type 2 diabetes in youth that we've seen in the last 20 years.
De La Peña wants people to know that her son Abram did nothing wrong, yet here he is with type 2 diabetes and the social stigma that blames the disease on the patient.
There's a lot of blame and there's a lot of shame in type 2 because you chose to eat unhealthy, you chose to have a sedentary lifestyle and gain weight. And because you chose that lifestyle, that's basically your penance.
When Abram was diagnosed, he wasn't obese. He was active and his diet was normal for an American teen.
But since the diagnosis, he's changed his eating habits.
They told me I had to do carb correction and I was just like, okay. I immediately adapted to it because the way I put it in my brain was if I eat too much, I'll be gone.
Because of this mindset, Abram is off all of his medication, but he recognizes that his type 2 is never going to go away.
And he's back to writing music and performing for enthusiastic crowds. He just checks his blood sugar throughout his sets. He's dealing with diabetes without skipping a beat.
Without a national strategy, what can be done about childhood type 2 diabetes? There are well-meaning people in medicine and education who want to save kids from a diabetes diagnosis, and they're fighting the good fight, particularly with helping raise awareness and influence action with patients from underserved communities.
Diabetes is pervasive and impacts already vulnerable communities that need to know the hold that diabetes will have on their family, community, and society once it emerges, and understand the burden of care. There is no way to soften the message. It's up to everyone to be informed, confront denial, get tested, and face diabetes. It's also up to us to raise awareness and demand action so that underserved communities can also navigate barriers to resources and to the information and care they need to fight childhood type 2 diabetes.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters, Diagnosis Diabetes.
This special project was funded with a grant from the 2022 Impact Fund for Reporting on Health Equity and Health Systems offered by the USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism.
You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can listen to past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org. And you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.